from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in this week for Michael Krasny. For the past 10 years, Alameda County has worked hard to both prosecute the perpetrators of sex trafficking and develop programs to help its victims. But the scandal involving an 18-year-old Oakland girl who says she had sex with several Oakland policemen and numerous officers from other Bay Area law enforcement agencies while still a minor has not only shaken City Hall and county government, but it's also diverted our attention from the victims of sexual exploitation. In our first hour this morning, we return our focus to those individuals, particularly the children who were sexually used and abused on the streets of our cities. That story next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in this week for Michael Krasny. The sex scandal involving one 18-year-old Oakland girl and perhaps as many as 30 law enforcement officers from a half a dozen different agencies stunned the Bay Area 6 weeks ago, and the shockwaves are still being felt. The headlines and talk shows it provoked were all deserved. But this morning on Forum, we wanted to return to the problem that should still receive our attention. The children who were exploited the day before that story broke, the day after, and who continue to be exploited today. According to state statistics, many of the victims of sex trafficking were first exploited at a shockingly young age. For boys, it's often as young as 11 to 13. For girls, 12 to 14. Many of those children have come out of the child welfare system vulnerable and targeted early. And so as one story rocked the Oakland Police Department and law enforcement around the Bay Area, we want to focus this hour on what's being done to protect all the other victims of sex trafficking whose stories don't often make news. Joining us for our conversation this morning, Nancy O'Malley, District Attorney for Alameda County. Good morning. Thanks for being part of our program.
Thank you.
Joining us as well is Kate Walker Brown. She's an attorney and heads the child trafficking team at the National Center for Youth Law in Oakland. Good morning as well.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Adela Rodarte joins us too. She's Assistant Program Director for West Coast Children's Clinic's Transition Age Youth Services Program in Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being here. And Latoya Gix joins us as well. She's an advocate, a survivor of sex trafficking herself in Oakland, and now works with the Alameda County District Attorney's Office. Latoya, good morning as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Latoya, I want to have you start our conversation, if you would please, about your own experience as someone who survived sexual exploitation as a young girl. Tell us something about your story, how that came about. How did that first come to pass? How was it that you were vulnerable to this? How was it that someone approached you? Give us some sense of how this takes place on the streets of Oakland, on the streets of so many cities in this country.
Well, actually, my exploiter was someone that I knew at a very young age, and he knew that my father was not always currently in my life. And so he seen the opportunity that was available to him to exploit me. And he took me out of my mother's home at 18. Not too long after that, after he gained fully my trust, he exploited me for a very long time.
Was he someone who made an appeal to you as someone who said, I'm someone who can protect you. I'm someone who can maybe take the place of others who haven't been there for you?
Absolutely. He became what I was actually looking for. He became, in a sense, it was sick because he kind of became like a father figure because I didn't have that. But in a sense, he was my boyfriend. And so that's what it was. But that's what he portrayed to me, that he would protect me, he would take care of me. And he did take me shopping and different things like that.
And so in a way, he did provide something for you that hadn't been provided before?
Absolutely.
And for a long time, did you find yourself convincing yourself that it was okay? Or did it really feel like it was okay?
To be honest, I grew up in a my mom's household was very stable. She wasn't on welfare. She had a good job and stuff like that. But so I did grow up with morals in church and different things like that. But I'd had to convince myself that it was okay to get through it for the night for my first time. And after that, it just became a part of me. But eventually, the first initial step was convincing myself that it was okay, convincing myself that it's okay to be with a stranger that you have no idea who they are, where they come from, what's their last name, what's their first name.
And sometimes you're with any number of people on the same night, day after day after day?
Yep. Just like any other girl.
And how long did that go on, Latoya?
I got out of the life of human trafficking when I was about 24. It was 2 weeks approximately from my 25th birthday, and I started when I was 18.
Wow. So for 6 years.
Yep.
And what happened that changed your life, that allowed you to make that change?
Well, actually, I just hit rock bottom. And at the point I hit rock bottom, I went back to my foundation, which is church. And I started going to my church, Greater Love Ministries in San Leandro. And they rehabilitated me back into regular life, if I could say it like that. They comforted me right where I was. And they provided me with wraparound services, wraparound love, wraparound care. And they just accepted exactly who I was at that moment, how I dressed, how I act, how I did everything. And they treated me as the actual human being. They didn't look at me any different.
Can you say something about the moment where that led you to that, what that rock, where you were at that moment of being at rock bottom, and what opened up for you, what that turning point was that allowed you that way back?
My rock point moment, the bottom of the barrel moment for me was when I had felt like I had achieved the impossible, as far as getting money, you know, the best money, the best clothes, the best cars, having multiple people, multiple girls, you know, in our with the guy and everything. It just felt like there was no ending to it. And I just came to a place of, you know, is God really real? Is this all my life is going to be? Is about getting more money, you know, and ultimately money doesn't make you happy. It's about you making yourself happy, and loving yourself and respecting yourself will make you happy. And so when I hit that point, you know, I had services. I had, my church was my services. We didn't have all the programs that we have now. Thank you, Nancy O'Malley. But we didn't have all those programs when I was getting out of the life. And so the only program I could go to was Jesus. And you know, the author and finisher of my faith, and he restored me, and so did my church.
And how long has it been now since you've been back away from that rock bottom point? How long has your journey been since?
6 years.
So 6 years back, 6 years in, and now 6 years back on the yes. other side.
Yes.
Thank you for telling your story and for staying with us throughout the rest of our program. Adela Rodarte, as you listen to Latoya Gix, tell that story. Pick up from there what it reminds you of all the stories that you've heard, and what we can learn from that about not only the experience of so many Latoyas, and what that can tell us about what we can do to not only prevent that from happening to other Latoyas, but what we can do for more girls so that they can be back on the other side.
Thank you. You know, my stomach hurts, and it hurts in regards to what you've been through. Just like you and many other girls, it's unfortunately that, you know, someone can come and take advantage of you, lure you into doing things that you will never think you would do. take advantage of your trust, take advantage of the love or, you know, the hopes that you have to be with this person or this person, you know, promising things to you, but yet using your vulnerability to take advantage of you. The story that you gave is an example of like many girls who have had people in their life who have taken advantage of them. And it starts off with someone they trust. So it could be a boyfriend. It could be a counselor. It could be a first person of contact. You know, it's someone who they trusted, who they actually turn to for something, you know, for, you know, sometimes, you know, the girls have needs, and the girls that we represent in a program, majority of our girls, 86% of them have our system involved girls, are, you know, girls of color, and they come already embedded with foster care, embedded with probation. So they're already lacking a stable home. They are lacking a positive role figure in their life. They're already lacking the basic needs that a child needs in a home. So there's already all these different needs that are fundamental to the development of a youth and the development of their mind of who they can trust and what is good, what is bad. No, you know, that is not there. So when someone that they trust and they, you know, they confide in them, you know, how they feel, who they love, who, you know, what is their aspirations in life, who has disappointed them, they trust this person with all their intimate secrets. And next thing you know, this person takes all those secrets, takes that to their advantage and starts to manipulate them in coming into the life.
Nancy O'Malley, as District Attorney at Alameda County, you know, as Adela Rodarte has spoken from the children she sees at the West Coast Children's Clinic in Oakland, these are children who are already vulnerable. So many have come out through these programs or through child welfare programs, have already been vulnerable, have already been on the seen tough times. And then they're taken advantage of that much further, sometimes by people who are in a position of trust. In Latoya's case, it was someone who saw someone vulnerable and could take advantage. It must gall you all the further, in this case of the Oakland police, of people who are in a position of trust. It doesn't have to be a cop. It could be a teacher. It could be a counselor. It could be so many people. That kids who are already vulnerable are taken advantage of that much more. It must kill you to see that.
It does. It really is. It's disgusting to me. I started working. I had my very first case involving a minor who was being exploited in 1996. I was a prosecutor in going to court with basically teenage girls and some boys. And I just want to make that point that while we talk about girls, that they present in the way that Adela and Latoya have discussed, but we see boys also. The fact that anyone could take advantage of a young person's vulnerabilities is disgraceful. But then it is more than that when it's a person of authority, because for a lot of young people, when they look to see where can I go, like Latoya was saying, I found myself saying, is this all I'm ever going to have? Where can I go to get out of it? And the person you go to is the person who's supposed to protect you and help you and move you beyond this experience turns out to be yet another exploiter. And I will say that, you know, we have a very big focus on prosecuting the traffickers and prosecuting the purchasers. In the trafficking, we've prosecuted more traffickers in the state of California than all of the other counties combined, because we have a very aggressive way of prosecuting people that are exploiting our young people, especially in sex trafficking. But we also have a big effort to go after those who are purchasers. And those are the ones that are sometimes police officers, sometimes counselors, sometimes doctors, sometimes judges. And it's really disgraceful that adult men primarily are trolling our streets or trolling our internets looking for young women or boys to buy them for sex. And so it just motivates me and the people like me to work harder to punish them, to make them accountable for their behavior, and at the same time, try to make sure that they understand that what's on the other side of that purchase, that commercial transaction, is a real person who has real feelings, who's been victimized, who's vulnerable to a lot of bad things happening to them. And that's what really drives me.
Nancy O'Malley, District Attorney for Alameda County. As Nancy O'Malley suggests, Kate Walker Brown, Alameda County has been at the forefront of this battle in many ways, has gotten a lot of attention nationally. It's part of the bitter irony of the story that took place in Oakland over the last 6 weeks. Yet, you know, if there's still, of course, a huge problem in Oakland and in Alameda County. So what more needs to be done as you look at this problem from the National Center for Youth Law in Oakland? What more ought to be directed? The legislature's back at work this week. There's lots of new legislation being proposed in Sacramento. What more attention ought to be given to this problem? What more legislatively ought to be done to bring about more protection for young people, be they boys or girls, on the streets of Oakland?
Mm-hmm. Well, we absolutely agree with what Nancy O'Malley and the district attorney's office is doing in Alameda to target the demand and target the people that are facilitating the exploitation. But our focus is really on the victims themselves. And what can we do to ensure that our children who are victims of abuse and neglect are treated as such? And so our office and many of our partners are working, including District Attorney O'Malley's office, West Coast Children's Clinic, are working to get a bill passed, SB 1322, that is carried by Senator Holly Mitchell, to recognize these children as abuse and victims of abuse and neglect and treat them as such so that they can no longer be criminalized for something done to them. They're victims of abuse. They've been raped multiple times, and we can no longer criminalize them. And
now, would this only be for juveniles, or would it be for anybody who is who has been arrested for being a prostitute? Would it be for all people who are involved in sex trafficking, or only for juveniles?
It's only for individuals under the age of 18. And it really tracks what the federal government and other states have done to say that these are children. Someone is coercing them and taking advantage of their vulnerabilities. And we shouldn't treat them as criminals. We need to wrap supportive services like LaToya was talking about around them and provide them services through social services rather than in a punitive juvenile justice context.
Now, part of the pushback on that, at least as I understand it in the past, Nancy O'Malley, has been that while you don't want to necessarily stigmatize kids who are involved in this, there's a reason why you do that. Arresting can help because you want to separate them from their pimp. You want to make sure that they get protection. You need to provide a kind of wall between them. And the only way you can do that is by at least initiating that criminal prosecution system.
So, that's right. And I think that what we've learned in Kate has been part of this effort that I started with a research institute called the HEAT Institute. And we did hearings all over the state. And what we heard over and over again was the people that have those positions like law enforcement or prosecutors are desperate to find a way to separate the child away from the exploiter or away from the demand. And in that effort, what the default has been to arrest them just to get them into juvenile hall so they're separated away. But we have to do better than that. And that's really what the bill allows us to do, is it requires us, those of us that have these positions of policy development and program development, to think more strategically about how we're going to keep kids safe without victimizing them further by locking them up.
What would make a difference to kids on the street, LaToya and Adela as well? It's hard for me to imagine if you're in a situation like you were in, LaToya, and the kids that you see, Adela, how you're going to trust anyone. You know, how do you, you know, you talk about the need for wraparound services. How do you develop that sense of trust? What would have made a difference if you can go back in time, LaToya, to where you were as a young woman, 18, 19-year-old, someone who wasn't going to arrest you, but would you have believed someone who said, I'm going to help you? Do you have a sense now in the girls that you work with and counsel on those Saturday morning programs in Alameda County as to how you develop a sense of trust that does give you a sense of safety?
Yes, I believe that if I had someone that was either also a former survivor, maybe, or someone that was very highly informed about human trafficking, that I would have gone to them for help, and I would have sought a house like Claire House to have healing that was informed about human trafficking, because I didn't want to go to a regular safe house, you know, a regular shelter, because it's technically not a safe house. So he could have found me there, and no one there kind of knows about human trafficking, knows what I'm going through, knows how to counsel me, knows how to support me. And I feel like that's what we provide at YWSP, is support for the girls right where they are. And we help them right where they are to kind of help guide them. And
can you add to that as well, Adela, about the kinds of things that can make a difference, that can bring people along, that are better than taking someone to juvenile hall?
Well, I mean, you're dealing with victims of early childhood abuse, early traumas. So this is like re-traumatizing them, because you're actually punishing them for a crime that has been committed to them and a crime that they can't consent for. So coming in to see someone who has been punished for a crime that's been committed to them, they don't see themselves as victims. So they're like, lady, how do you see me as a victim when I'm in jail? So it's like building that systemic change, cultural shift and change, and being seeing them as victim, being treated as victim from the beginning. It starts to set the platform for any other service that you will deliver, because you start to see them for who they are, as the victim, as the child, as the whole, not just the label of a prostitute or a a child prostitute, because that is not such thing as a child prostitute.
Can I add one thing to that?
Yes, O'Malley.
So the default cannot be locking a victim up in juvenile hall. We don't do that if somebody self-identifies as a victim of crime. We find the resources. The challenge we have now is that while we have child welfare, if it's a minor, who can intervene and provide some resources, we don't really have housing. We don't have safe places. LaToya talked about Claire's House, which is a project we're doing in Alameda County with Catholic Charities to take over an old convent or a rectory, real estate, where we can create safe, supportive environment, not religious or faith-based necessarily, but a place. And that's really the challenge in this state, is that we don't have good alternatives right now. And for a lot of the young people who have been exploited, who were foster in the foster system, and their voices went to Washington, D.C., and told Congress, you failed us. And their voices have led to a lot of these systemic changes that we're now implementing. But we need to do better. We need to have the other options to, you know, if I leave the exploiter, where do I go? To the streets? To nowhere? Where do I go?
So it sort of perhaps doesn't even need to be said, but along with making these statutory changes in terms of decriminalizing, there needs to be the money and funding available to provide community services. Otherwise, just decriminalizing in and of itself isn't going to provide the resources that are necessary.
And I'm all about messaging. So I just want to say the term decriminalize would give the impression that it's not against the law. And that's really not what the legislation does. It reframes to identify victimization and not say it's okay for children to be engaging in commercial sex-related activity.
Nancy O'Malley, District Attorney, one of our guests this morning, as we continue our conversation about how we can better protect and support children who have been sexually exploited on the streets of Oakland and elsewhere around our state. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. The number to call to join us is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in this week for Michael Krasny. Our topic this hour, sex trafficking, the story which rocked not only the Bay Area, but really the nation as well, almost 2 months ago now, about the young girl in Oakland who says she has had sex with not only a number of Oakland police officers, but numerous officers from a variety of other Bay Area law enforcement agencies. Put a lot of attention, not only, of course, on that story, but to a degree on the larger problem of sex trafficking. And we are focusing this hour of Forum on that problem, but particularly on the youngest victims of sex trafficking and on what we can do both as a community and as a state to focus our attention on those, both girls and boys, what can be done to better support them, what can be done to provide the kinds of services they need. Joining us for our conversation are Kate Walker Brown. She's an attorney and is at the National Center for Youth Law in Oakland. Adela Rodarte, Assistant Program Director at West Coast Children's Clinic. LaToya Gix, advocate and survivor of sex trafficking, now working in the Alameda County District Attorney's Office, and Nancy O'Malley, District Attorney for Alameda County. We welcome your calls and participation in our program this morning. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. You can also join our conversation at 866-733-6786. Before the break, Kate Walker Brown, we were talking about not only the need to perhaps make certain changes in the law, but also to provide the kind of services and support and funding for girls who are trying to, and boys who are trying to get away from being victimized in the way that they currently are. Let's pick up on that and what some of those possible pieces of legislation are and what they would provide.
We agree that arresting these children alone is insufficient. It has to be coupled with an interagency response that really addresses the youth's needs as well as their families or caregivers. And so in 2014, the legislature made that clear, first by clarifying the dependency code to say that children who are commercially sexually exploited or who trade sex to meet their basic needs may be served by child welfare, thus unequivocally stating that these are victims of abuse and neglect. The other thing the legislature did was create a program and attached $14 million of funding, since now after this budget session, going up to $19 million for counties in our state to create interagency protocols to serve children from the point of identification through long-term stabilization. So right now, 35 of the 58 counties in California have developed those responses. And certainly they can be made more robust, but we are on the track to create a response that says, these children are victims. What are we going to do from point of identification to wrap services around them? And we've seen with people like LaToya and Adela that coupling an agency response with community-based partners can be incredibly effective at engaging the youth and keeping them stable while not putting them through a juvenile justice process and shackling them with all that goes along with a punitive response. It disallows them from staying engaged in school. It gives them a criminal record that may impede their ability to succeed further in their life. So we really need to focus on the progress that has been made and the legislature's leadership in saying these kids are victims of abuse and we need to serve them through a social services context.
Kate Walker Brown. Let's hear from some of our listeners this morning who are eager to join our conversation and express their views and ask their questions as well. Dave in Castro Valley gets us started. Dave, go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. Thank you for your program. I think it's really great that this is on the air. And I actually have two questions. One is for LaToya. My question is, when you were talking about hitting rock bottom, how hard is it, you know, for you? Was it for you or is it for the girls in general, you know, to get away from the controlling person there, you know, from the pimp, from the person that's running your life at that time? And number two, to the panel in general, what are your feelings about taking away the demand, you know, for sex with people that are being exploited by having sex that is actually legal, where there would be legal sex workers, you know, in Alameda County or in California in general? And if this would take away from the demand where, you know, there wouldn't be victims on the street because if somebody wanted to have sex, they could get it legally.
Okay.
Thank you.
Dave, thanks. Thanks for the question. LaToya first on just if you say a little bit more about the challenges of getting away from someone who has such control over your life.
It is not easy at all because, for one, you don't realize that you're a victim. You don't know that you are a victim. So at the point of reference, when someone is trying to detach you from that individual, you don't see them as hurting you. You see them as loving you, especially if you don't know what love is. So It's extremely hard, but it is possible because I myself walked away from my exploiter, literally. But I took a lot of bumps and bruises for it because there wasn't, again, a safe place to go at the point of escaping.
literally bumps and bruises? I mean, you were someone, I imagine, who was physically abused through that. So hard, I think, for us, probably for people like me who've had a more privileged life, to understand how someone who exploits could be viewed as someone who loved. Can you help us understand that? Because I think that must be key. If you feel like this person is actually taking care of you, then that diminishes your desire to walk away from that person.
Right. It reminds me of the book that is called like the Five Love Languages, right? So everyone has a love language. And if that person is satisfying your love language, and as a child, you don't know what a love language is. You don't know what love is. You just see whatever's presented to you. And my particular individual knew me from the age of like 12. And he was my neighborhood dope boy on the corner, you know, and he seen me grow up and he knew my mom, you know, and all this stuff. So I assumed that he was a safe person. I assumed that he loved me because when I was younger, he would buy me, you know, ho-hos and ding-dongs at the corner store. And when I got older, he bought me heels. And I was like, oh, my God, he bought me some heels. You know, I was excited because growing up in Oakland and in the hood in general, when someone does something nice for you, that's accredited as love because you're not used to people doing nice things for you, especially for free. At the moment that he did a lot of things for me, he didn't ask for anything in return until later on.
So he, in some ways, built up some capital with LaToya Adela through ho-hos and heels, right? So how do you change that? How do you work with girls to say, you know, just because he's buying you ho-hos and heels, that ain't love?
Exactly. That goes back to that relationship and that trust because, you know, the person, as well as like many other people who victimize our girls, they've been watching them. They've been basically watching their vulnerabilities, studying them. They've been preying on them. So they know what are their weaknesses. So definitely you have to sort, you know, kind of create and help them see what is healthy, what is appropriate. It's part of the relationship, and that's the work that we do. You know, being there with them consistently, seeing them, and not asking for anything in return, because a lot of the girls are used to having to give something in exchange because they've been taught that their time is worth something. There's value to them, and whoever spends time with them, they have to get something in return.
So part of teaching trust is that it there doesn't have to be an exchange.
Exactly.
That trust isn't built on, I'm giving you this, so you give me that.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're building them, their self-esteem, their self-confidence, their voice, their value, and their choice.
Yeah. To Dave's other question, Kate Walker Brown and then Nancy O'Malley on this too, because we have another email on this too. The only way to solve the prostitution problem, a listener writes, is to decriminalize it. That was Dave's other question. If you legalize it, then you take away the problem. Kate Walker Brown.
My view on this is that we really need to address some of the structural problems that lead children and adults to be vulnerable to this. You know, when we talk to young women and survivors of trafficking, I haven't heard one say that this was a glamorous lifestyle that I chose and wanted to participate in. If there was a way out, I would take it. And so I think as a society, we really need to start looking at the poverty, the homelessness, the other racism, biases that exist within our culture that drive people into a situation where their last effort is to trade sex to meet their basic needs, to put a roof over their head, to feed their babies. We really need to address that, and I'm not sure that decriminalization of it as a whole will really address that problem. We really need to focus on demand.
Nancy O'Malley on legalizing prostitution.
So, we've heard from thousands and thousands and thousands of survivors of both as adult prostitution or commercial sex and minors, is that it's not a victimless crime. It is taking advantage of somebody who doesn't see a different path for themselves or a different life for themselves. And like LaToya referred to the love language, that, you know, I just reiterate what Kate's saying, that I have yet to meet someone who, there's a coalition of sex workers, but I've yet to meet someone who's gotten out of the life to say, that was my dream when I was a child to do that. And now we're starting to see more former purchasers come forward and talk about their experience and why. And what's at the base of it is the objectivization of another human being, that through watching porn, through going to strip clubs, by turning these individuals, these human beings, into just an object that exists for their pleasure is not healthy, and it's not victimless for sure. And so I don't support legalizing. Nevada has legalized prostitution, and they still have a huge human trafficking problem. Mm-hmm. So it's about exploitation. It's about hurting another person. It's about treating people as objects and not as humans.
And to Jennifer in Sacramento. Jennifer, go ahead, please.
I'm really feeling what that last person said, who was just speaking about demand. It seems like every 2 or 3 years, there's a show on Forum about prostitution. This is great. I honor LaToya. I honor all the work these people are doing. But, you know, every 2 years, we got a show. There was that woman, Sage SF, in San Francisco, who used to be prostitute. There's these people who are victimized now. We have task forces on it. I think there's one surefire way to stop this, and that's to tell the truth and shame the devil, to arrest these people who are using these children. I mean, buying her ho-hos, that is a very young girl who was being groomed. We need to arrest those people and arrest the Johns, get their pictures up, get a harsher prosecution for them, and put an end to this. This is ridiculous that we need to have so many millions of dollars of services for our children. I don't understand the thinking that's going behind this. Without a perpetrator, we don't have a victim, and we know how to get these perpetrators.
Got it, Jennifer. Thanks. Thanks for pushing our focus to that question more. Let's spend some time on that, because there is also legislation being proposed, and I know this is something that you care a lot about, Nancy O'Malley, about pushing on the demand side and upping the focus on that, whether that's increasing penalties. And you've also done some work on the shaming side of this as well.
The one thing about shaming is that that when you shame the perpetrator or the purchaser, you also take the chance of shaming their family, and especially the children of that perpetrator. So part of it is there's shaming that could be shaming can lead to somebody thinking twice before they decide to engage in a commercial sex or trying to buy someone online. But I do think that we have to punish people for what they're doing, and they are raping children. And, you know, I don't use the term John because it gets them, it's a nice person name and it lets them off the hook. Really what they are, we had a billboard that went for several months. It said they're not Johns, they're child rapists. So let's mm-hmm. call it what it mm-hmm. is. And until we start telling the truth about what people are and quit labeling them with some nice name with the victims, the label was, oh, they're prostitutes. So that's a bad name. But for the purchaser who's actually doing the bad act against a child, we call them Johns. And, you know, and I'm married to a guy named John, so I really don't like that name being used. And that's, you know, I think that we have to really increase the punishment and start calling it what it is.
And yet the prosecution statistics, at least the last ones that I saw quoted in an LA Times article the other day, was that in Oakland, for all the work that you've done, for all the fact that Alameda County has done more to prosecute in this area than anywhere else in the state, most of the people who are arrested are still women.
Well, yeah. So here's one of the bills that is at the governor's desk right now. Is a bill that I'm sponsoring, which is SB 420. And what that does is there's only one section that addresses commercial sex, soliciting or purchasing. So what our bill does is it breaks into the three categories: an adult sex worker who is offering to sell or selling, an adult who's purchasing an adult sex worker, or an adult who's purchasing a minor. Then we're going to get real data, because right now, if anybody runs a stat on using that one code section, there's no way to tell whether it's an adult sex worker, whether it's a woman, whether it's a man, whether it's a child who's being exploited. So we have a very busy calendar in the Oakland courts with people who are purchasing. We also have a busy calendar with women who have been arrested multiple times. And this goes back to what Kate and Adela and LaToya are talking about. We need to have a different path for people to be able to live their lives, not standing on a street corner or selling themselves on the internet, but having jobs and having way to protect and care for their families.
But you wouldn't disagree that there needs to be more done to focus on the demand side, prosecute more on the demand side.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a lot of initiatives in my office through a network called CEASE just to do that.
Laura in Berkeley is up next. Up, oh, we've jumped to – we'll get back to you, Laura, I promise. We're going to Peyton now in San Francisco. Peyton, go ahead.
Hi. I want to say thank you very much for the show. I'm actually a social worker working with these kiddos, and I wanted to relay a couple signs that might be helpful, especially for parents and teachers. So the trends that I've seen with these kids that you have to watch out for is it generally starts with older boyfriends. Another thing that I see a lot is having two cell phones. Usually they hide one. But if you see them with multiple cell phones, that could be a red flag as well. Money is a big one, either having a lot of it suddenly or not having any of it. And for parents and teachers, I would definitely recommend whenever a kid goes missing, please make the report, because these kids run away repeatedly. And if the police reports aren't made for these kids continuously, then they kind of just disappear. So I know it can be a frustrating process for parents and everyone, but it really does help and keeps an eye on these kids because they're so isolated.
Peyton, thanks. Thanks for raising that. Adela, anything you'd like to add to that you've noticed in your years at the West Coast Children's Clinic in terms of just things, whether you're a parent, a teacher, working with kids, around kids, or another kid, that are signs that you ought to pay attention to, that signal you that this is a kid that may be that's vulnerable or that may be already being exploited?
Definitely. There's definitely there are risk factors. There are signs that people should look for when looking into these children, especially people who are in constant contact with children, school counselors, like, you know, Peyton said, the parents, you know, law enforcement. We've created a screening tool because exactly like what Latoya said, what we come to find out is that when we meet these young girls at 14 and we start to talk to them more about how they got involved, what happened to them, who was the first, you know, contact of exploitation, we find out that they have been exploited 2-3 years prior to by the time they come to us. So what we're seeing is that they have been failed already years before. So they were not recognized of signs of early childhood trauma, of missing school, of having, you know, the phones, or having, you know, bruising, or having unexplainable means, or moving around, bouncing from place to place. Kids are in foster care. He made a good point. When they go AWOL and they're not reported, this is why they're targeted, because they know, the exploiters know that no one's going to come looking for them. They're the throwaway kids that no one wants.
The screening tool that you mentioned, Adela Rodarte, is that something that's available that other schools or people who work with kids or other kids could look up? And is that available through through the West Coast Children's Clinic?
Yes, it is. It's something we develop internally. Based on working with this population, we started with 5 girls in 2009, and now we're serving over 120. And the screening tool is something that we have trained across 55 different counties, and it has been implemented in the training. So we're now trying to get it out so people can use and standardize it so anyone can use it. It's a common language with risk factors that anyone can pick up.
Adela Rodarte, again, the Assistant Program Director at West Coast Children's Clinic. To Sarah Jane in Sacramento. Sarah Jane, go ahead, please.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share, I'm a wraparound worker in child welfare system, and many of my kids are, I call them my kids, are teen girls, and I have two that are on the run right now, and I'm pretty sure are involved in CSEC. One of them
CSEC
I know
being
is in Oakland.
I just was asking you for the interpretation of the abbreviation. You said commercial sex worker, is that what that CSEC?
Yes.
Okay, go
commercial
ahead.
Commercial sexual exploitation of children.
Yes. So I think that we also need to look at, you know, where these kids are coming from when they're going into, and I didn't hear the whole show, so please excuse me if I'm being redundant, but a lot of times they're put in group homes where they've, you know, they'll talk to other girls who have been exploited and they share that information and they run together. A lot of times what they're looking for is someone that cares and loves and wants the best for them, and they get that from foster homes. They don't get that from group homes. And I know there's a movement to, you know, reduce the number of kids that are in group homes, but what that's going to take is a lot of trained foster parents And that costs money. You know, it's not just a regular foster home. It's got to be a foster home that's trained to deal with kids who have had a lot of trauma in their lives.
Sarah Jane, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for raising those issues. It's all of these things in the end, of course, come back to resources, Nancy O'Malley. And it's always a challenging time in local government to find the resources available. Is there anything good that comes out of the recent scandal and attention that this issue has raised in terms of raising more awareness, in terms of the possibility of you're getting the resources that you need?
Yeah. The federal government and the state of California have really stepped up. There's a great need for more resources, but they have really stepped up to provide resources. The out of this horrible scandal comes the opportunity for us to first tell the truth about what the situation is. And that's something Alameda County has really been known for, is that we were one of the first to take on this issue. And that was because we were telling the truth about it so we could do something about it. I do want to point out that with the law enforcement that, you know, in Oakland, there are 8 officers who are identified, but there are 700 other officers who are working every day to protect people and to help. And we heard from a lot of survivors, and I have too, about police officers who have been the lifesaver or the social worker who's been the lifesaver. So I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater on this. But I do think this is our opportunity to create yet a different path where someone who's being exploited by a person who is in authority has a different place to go to report it. We will fix that. We can prosecute people. We can terminate people from their employment. We can take their license away if we know about it. And so that's really on my forefront, is what is that alternative path? How do we get that known to people who are being exploited so they can have a safe place to report what happened to them and not feel like nobody will listen?
David in San Francisco joins us next. David, go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm getting kind of emotional by listening to all this stuff right now. But in 1984, I started sex working on Polk Street here in San Francisco. It lasted all the way till I was 17 and a half. And then I became a CNA. And that was only because they were throwing out flyers. And the initiative was get $25 if you go and try to sign up for school. And because I was underage, I had to go back home and try to get hold of one of my parents to have them sign the contract, which it went through. And it all happened. I became a CNA. I became a commissioner of the HIV Planning Council because at the age of 21, I was HIV positive already. And that's the big fear, too. Like, some of these kids are being infected with HIV at a very young age. And that's when me being a commissioner, I used to see a lot of that in the Bay Area. So it's heartbreaking. Another thing about one of your callers, the names, the John and all that stuff. Now, I mean, it's a crazy thing that they're calling it daddy, you know, sugar daddy, or you know, they even have parties, you know, about this bars called daddies. And it's pathetic. It's sad, you know, where they just make fun of it. You know, young dudes with older men, you see it at all the like Folsom Street fairs. You see guys tied up, young dudes, guys with older men, and they actually making fun of it, making it seem like it's okay. Websites, twinks, that's what they're calling these young dudes nowadays, you know? It's pathetic. It's sad. And I see it. I see all the signs. I see older men walking around with homeless kids, and I just know what's going on. I see it. I feel it. And I'm just like watching all this right here. It's just right there in front of your face. If you look for it, it's right there in front of your face.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of the things probably that makes your story and hearing others in this program makes me think about is about the importance of, for all of us, I think, of paying attention to what's right out there in front of us. David, thank you. Thank you for the call. A couple of other comments coming in that we should know. Jerry writes in that we should be sure to remember the New Day program for children, that they provide excellent wraparound care for safe places. Stephanie writes that it's important to remember that there are other countries that have done well in this and that there are less that we can learn. Jessica tweets, we need to make sure that we do prosecute, because what message does it send when we don't make public, when we don't prosecute even the most public of cases? And Amy tweets in, I teared up to listening to you, Latoya Gix. Thanks for sharing your story so bravely. We just have a moment left, so very, very briefly, I just would like to ask each of you to say something that you'd like listeners to do You know, we tend to think about what should the legislature do? What should the police do? What should the DA do? What would you like each listener to do? Nancy O'Malley?
We have a law that was SB 1193. We have an app now called MAP 1193. That's something where it requires 12 different types of businesses to post signs that talk about human trafficking. So a victim might see it or the public can report it. And I would say that as a regular person on the street, that help us enforce that law, because that will help more people come forward and be freed from slavery.
Kate Walker Brown, something you'd like someone to do out there?
Ask questions.
Hmm.
When you see a kid that seems disconnected or is sitting in a bus stop for too long, ask questions. See if they're doing all right.
Adela Rodarte.
You know, be willing to help out and give them hope, because a lot of these kids are hopeless. So be there with the hope for them.
And Latoya Gex, a last short word from you, please.
I would like everyone to change the way they think. This, from the videos of the girls twerking to everything in our society, we need to change the way we think and stop looking at them as, or stop looking at the lifestyle as just so glamorous, like the different movies, but look at them as victims and that they need services and wraparound services at that.
And look at each other. Yeah. Latoya Gex, thanks so much for being part of our program. Nancy O'Malley, Kate Walker Brown, Adela Rodarte, thanks all for being part of our program this morning. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lorberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producers Amanda Stupai and Jeremy Siegel. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Executive producer is Joanne Wallace. I'm Dave Iverson, in for Michael Krasny. And this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.